Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
Have you ever sat there wondering why success feels like it's playing hide and seek with you? Why is it that other people make it look so easy? Why you feel like you're fighting invisible mazes just to make it through the day? Why does it seem like they got the blueprint and you were left with scraps? In today's video, we're going to visit a multifamily community in the Phoenix area. Design, gorgeous. Location, prime. But what we really want to know is this. Do the numbers back it up, or does it just look good on paper? Today, I'm going to break down what I call failure on paper. You fail on paper so you don't have to fail in real life. Stick with me until the end and you'll find out exactly whether this one makes a cut for the Kitty Sisters or does it get cut from the list.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
And who am I to talk about this? Over the last few years, I went from fashion to over 400 in multifamily real estate. So trust me when I tell you, I would choose to fail 100% of the time before I ever fail in real life. And who knows, this property right here, it might just be the one we buy.
The multifamily business, at first glance, it might not seem that exciting. Monthly rents, sure. But when you compare that each unit may rent for $1,400 per month to how much money you have to put in, it feels kind of underwhelming. One unit, it can only turn once every 12 months. It gets you thinking, is it really worth it? But then why are so many people still jumping into multifamily real estate? We used to wonder the same thing until we saw with our own eyes an investment of $3.9 million that turned into more than 3x return. That's profit straight into the investor's bank accounts. No fluff. A lot of people in this industry have quietly built serious wealth this way. No drama, no spotlight, just smart moves. Disclaimer, the numbers in this episode are estimate and are for educational and modeling purposes only. Viewer discretion is advised. This is not legal, tax, nor financial advice. Please do your own due diligence before investing. Back to the regular programming. Before we begin, let's first define what would be considered success and what would be considered a failure. Because if you don't define success, you won't recognize success. And if you can't recognize it, you'll walk right past it, still searching for something you already had. So for me, I define success as a syndicator or a general partner this way. A successful multifamily investment is one, your money is preserved and grows in a meaningful way over time. Two, you gain long-term wealth as the property increases in value. Three, you get tax benefits that help you keep more of what you earn, like depreciation. Four, and it all happens while someone else, your tenants, helps pay down your loan. Now, let me introduce you to a 334-unit garden-style apartment community located in Phoenix, Arizona. As a disclaimer, due to confidentiality, we're not going to mention the property's name, address, nor show you their exact pictures. Now, this isn't just any property. It's strategically positioned in one of the most sought-after submarkets in the entire Phoenix metro. Here's what makes this location special. We're talking about just miles away from both Interstate 10 and US Route 60. But more importantly, we're in the shadow of Arizona State University, ranked number one in most innovative school in the nation by US News & World Report since 2016. With over 57,600 full-time students. The demographics here is impressive. Average household income within the 3-mile radius is $90,317. That's not just your typical rental market. High-earning professionals, graduate students, and young family who can afford quality housing. While many parts of the Phoenix metro has been experiencing rent declines and struggling to maintain occupancy, this part of the valley is still going strong thanks to a unique mix of demographics that I just mentioned. Was built in 1981. That's 43 years old, which is actually too old for the Kitty Sisters. Unless there is a super compelling story, we aim for newer assets. Think apartments that were built in the mid-2000s and newer.
It has garden-style construction across 40 buildings on 15.87 acres, giving us a density of 21.3 units per acre. The construction is wood frame with painted stucco exterior and built-up roof, which is very typical in the Phoenix area. The unit mix is beautifully balanced, 48% one-bedroom units, 47% two-bedrooms, and 5% three-bedroom units. The average unit size is 856 square feet, perfect for the target demographic of young professionals and small families. Now, here's what caught our attention. The current ownership has invested over $4.7 million in capital improvements. We're talking clubhouse renovations, pool area upgrades, tennis court improvements, new landscaping, exterior paint, HVAC systems, roofing, and water heater. They've essentially handled all the major deferred maintenance items. But here's the opportunity. 55% of the units still have classic interior. 51% lack in-unit washers and dryers. The ownership has proven that upgrading classic units and adding washer and dryers can capture around $290 per month premium. That's a 31% return on cost. The barriers to entry here are massive. Only three properties are currently under construction within a 3-mile radius. Meanwhile, the area's population is projected to increase by 14% by 2030. That represents a huge supply and demand imbalance. And here's the bonus. The average monthly cost of home ownership in the area is approximately $3,301. Average rents are at 42% discount to that. With average home prices at $485,151, there's a massive affordability gap driving rental demand.
Now, if you're not familiar with the Phoenix market, let me give you a little backstory.
Phoenix will always hold a special place in the hearts of the Kitty sisters. Picture this, it's 2019, and my sister and I are sitting in front of a weathered C-class apartment complex in Phoenix, 76 units that had seen better days. Most investors would have walked away, especially on their first deal. But something about this place, about Phoenix itself, whispered opportunity. We took the leap. 27 months later, as the world was still reeling from COVID's early chaos, we sold the same property for a staggering 311% return. That little apartment complex didn't just change our portfolio, it changed our lives. And Phoenix? Well, Phoenix was just getting started. Since that pivotal moment in 2019, I've watched the Valley of the Sun transform before my eyes. The transformation hasn't been random. It's been strategic, almost architectural in its precision. Downtown became the financial heartbeat. Scottsdale, already the crown jewel, saw home prices soar as affluent buyers recognized what locals had known for decades. But perhaps most exciting is what's happening at the base of Arizona State University. They're calling it the Silicon Desert now, and for good reason. This isn't the Phoenix of 2008, dependent on retirees and spring training tourists. Tourism now represents just 8% of the metro's area's economy, down from 15% in 2008. This is a diverse economic powerhouse that rose from the Great Recession's ashes, stronger, smarter, and more resilient. But here's where the story gets complicated. Success attracts attention, and attention brings competition. The same multifamily market that made us our fortune has become crowded with yield-hungry investors. Cap rates compressed from an average of 6.2% in 2019 to 4.8% at their peak in 2022. Properties that once sold for a reasonable price now commanded premium that would make even seasoned investors pause. As we continue to explore opportunities in the Phoenix MSA, we're not the same investors who bought that first 76-unit property. We're more deliberate, more strategic, more selective. Because in a market where rent growth has normalized at 2% annually, down from the 15% spike of 2021-22, the difference between a good deal and a great deal isn't just profit. It's the foundation for the next chapter of our story. Now, let me show you how to fail on paper the right way using the real numbers from. First, let's talk about gross income. This is simply the total amount of rental money flowing in from the property every month. It's your starting point. Here's how it's calculated. You take the number of units, multiply it by the rent per unit. This gives you the pure maximum rent the property is expected to make if every single unit was occupied and paying full rent. And here's the tip of the day. Economic occupancy sweet spot is anywhere between 93 to 95%. Anything higher than that, rent may be too cheap. It's a balancing act between making sure you push rent high as possible, but also maintain a stable occupancy. Let's look at the rent roll. 334 units with a total billing of $481,664 per month. That's $5.78 million annual in gross potential rent. But here's what's interesting. Sometimes the number can be lower than what the market is willing to bear. What do I mean by this? Why would the gross income be below market? There are two main reasons for this. First, the property owner just never bothered to raise rents over the years. Maybe they bought it and collected cash flow and got lazy. They're leaving money on the table every single month. And this was the case with the first multifamily property we've purchased. The previous owner owned it for 17 years and thus really never felt like pushing rent. Second reason is poorly managed. The management team isn't doing market surveys. They're not improving the property to justify higher rents, or they're not even aware of what comparable properties are charging. They're just coasting. But here's the beautiful thing. If the number starts lower than market, that's actually a good thing for you as a buyer. Why? Because you can see a clear way to increase the property's profit immediately. Let's say the market rent in this area is $1,500 per month, but the property is only getting $14 1,842 average. That's $58 per unit that you're leaving on the table. Multiply that by 334 units. That's $19,372 per month, or $232,464 annually in additional income just by bringing rent to market. Now, here's where it gets tricky. There's two types of vacancy you need to understand. Physical vacancy is simply empty units, but economic vacancy, that's the killer. Economic vacancy includes physical vacancy plus rent concessions, free months, bad debt, or below market rents. Looking at, we can see vacancy units, notice available units, and unrentable units. But the real vacancy loss come from rent concessions, collection issues. Your physical occupancy might be 95%, but your economic occupancy could be 88% when you factor in all the revenues that you're not collecting. Here's the pitfall that kills deals. Using the seller's rent roll at face value, that rent roll might show market rents, but are they actually collecting them? Are there concessions, free months? Always dig deeper than surface numbers. Now, let's talk about operating expenses. And this is where deals live or die. These are all the costs required to keep the property running, everything except your mortgage payment and below the line CapEx. Here's a dirty secret about operating expenses. A lot of times the property management team will heavily focus on the income side because that's how they make money, typically 3% of gross revenue. However, they may be less concerned with operating expenses because controlling costs doesn't directly increase your fee. And this can get out of hand quickly. When management isn't watching expenses like a hawk, you'll see maintenance costs balloon, utility bills skyrocket, and vendor contracts that haven't been renegotiated in years. It's death by a thousand cuts. So here's how we calculate expenses for property taxes: $232,823 annually, insurance $167,000, utilities $272,000, repairs and maintenance $338,264, management $140,352 at 2.5% of effective gross income. In the past, operating expense should be around 50% of total income. That includes rental and other income that goes into operating expenses. But with the rising property taxes and insurance costs, this isn't always the case anymore. And this is all very location specific. Areas like Phoenix will have very different insurance costs than Florida. Phoenix might run 35 to 40% expense ratio because of lower insurance and property taxes, but Florida, you're looking at 50% plus because of insurance, higher property taxes, and flood insurance requirements. Florida East Coast properties might have $3,000 to $5,000 per unit annual for insurance. Phoenix properties, maybe $500 to $800 per unit. That difference alone can swing your expense ratio by 10 to 15 percentage points. Property taxes are just as brutal. Texas properties can have 2 to 3% property tax rates. Arizona might be 0.8 to 1.2%. That's the difference between $20,000 to $60,000 annually on a $2 million property. So runs on a $1.96 million annual income expense on a $5.61 million effective gross income. That's a 35% expense ratio, which is very low, which can also turn into a red flag. Are there something there that they're not sharing? Because when it's too low, it might feel too good to be true. This alone isn't a deal killer, but you have to investigate further. So here's what looks concerning when I analyze the actual expenses. Areas that are too high, payroll at $698,471. That's $2,091 per unit annually, which seems excessive for a 334-unit multifamily property. Most properties run around $1,200 to $1,700 per unit. Advertising at $99,139, that's nearly $300 per unit for marketing, seems high for a stabilized property that should rely mostly on renewals and referrals. General and administrative fee, $173,750. Over $500 per unit in administrative costs suggests inefficient managing system. Potentially low red flags. On the flip side, let's look at what are potentially too low. Repair and maintenance at $330,264, only $1,013 per unit for a 43-year-old property that screams deferred maintenance. Industry standard is $1,200 to $1,500 per unit per property at this age. Here's the opportunity. The high payroll and administrative costs suggest operational inefficiency that a new owner can address. But that low maintenance number, that's a trap. You're looking at significant catch-up maintenance once you take over. A realistic expense projection could be reduce payroll by $200,000 due to efficiency improvements, cut advertising by $50,000 with better retention programs, increase maintenance budget by $150,000 to address deferred items, increase insurance by $50,000 for realistic coverage. Net result, expenses stay roughly the same, but you're actually maintaining the property properly instead of kicking the can down the road. This is exactly why you can't trust sellers' financials. They're showing artificially low maintenance to inflate their NOI while overspending on payroll due to poor management. In fact, I'm also sure they've moved some repair items below the line, aka NOI, in order to keep NOI as high as possible. Here's why operating expenses can make or break your deal. Every dollar you save in expense goes straight into your NOI. And as you'll see in the next section, NOI determines your property's value. Cut $100,000 in expenses at a 6% cap rate, you just increase your property's value by $1.67 million. Now let's talk about NOI, net operating income. This is the most important number in all of real estate because it determines everything. Your property's value, your ability to service debt, your cash flow.
$5.61 million effective gross income minus $1.96 million operating expense equals $3.65 million NOI. This is your property's true profit before debt service. Here's why NOI is so critical. It's how we increase the property's value. Property values are determined by NOI divided by cap rate. So if you increase NOI by $100,000 and the market trades at 6% cap rate, you've increased your property's value by $1.67 million. Let's say you buy and increase NOI from $3.67 million to $4 million through rent increases and expense reductions. At a 5.5% cap rate, your property value goes from $66.4 million to $72.7 million. You just created $6.3 million in value. NOI is also how we service debt. Banks look at your debt service coverage ratio, DSCR, NOI divided by annual debt service. With $3.67 million in NOI and $2.48 million debt service, you have a 1.47 DSCR. Banks typically want 1.25 or higher. Finally, NOI determines your cash minus $2.48 million debt service equals 1.17 cash flow annually. Now, there's two ways to improve NOI. Increase incomes, reduce expenses. Income side, raise rents, reduce vacancy, add revenue streams like laundry, parking, pet fees. Expense side, renegotiate contracts, improve energy efficiency, better maintenance practices. Remember the cap rate formula. NOI divided by purchase price equals cap rate, or flip it, NOI divided by cap rate equals property value. This is how professional investors think. Everything revolves around NOI. Properties in this submarket might trade for a 4.5 to 5.5% cap rate. So a $3.65 million NOI at 5% cap rate equals $73 million property value. At 6% cap rate, it's $60.8 million. The cap rate makes a massive difference in valuation. Here are NOI pitfalls. Using seller's pro forma NOI instead of your own conservative calculations. Not accounting for immediate cap expenditures that reduces NOI. Believing you can dramatically increase rents without improving the property. Underestimating expense increases over time. Now let's talk about debt service. This is your annual mortgage payments. It's what determines whether you make money or lose money every month after you buy the property. For this property, we got actual debt quotes from their broker's capital arm. Here's what real financing looked like. 5-year fixed rate at 5.44% on $44.6 million loan. 7-year fixed at 5.55% on $44 million loan. 10-year fixed rate at 5.68% on a $43.3 million loan. For example, let's use a 7-year loan. $44 million loan at 5.55% interest rate. Debt service equals to $2.48 million or about $206,500 per month. Here's a moment of truth. Cash flow calculation. NOI is $3.65 million minus debt service $2.48 million equals $1.17 million in positive cash flow annually. This is the money that actually goes into your pocket. But what's your actual return on your investment? If you put in $22 million down, about 35% down payment, that's $1.17 million cash flow, represents a $5.3 million cash on cash return. Interestingly, here are some financial pitfalls that can destroy deals. Over leveraging, put your deals at risk. If your net operating income drops, you might not cover your debt. Under leverage means you're leaving money on the table. You're not maximizing returns and your cash flow takes a hit. After $400 million plus in transactions, we know this. Cash flow is king, but only if you structure the deal right. Too much debt kills cash flow. Too little debt kills returns. The sweet spot is usually 60 to 7% loan to value ratio. So after running all the numbers, did pass or fail on paper? Let's look at the complete investment scenario, including the exit strategy. Here's our base case. Purchase price $66 million, $22 million in equity, $44 million in debt at 5.55%. Current NOI $3.65 million, annual cash flow $1.17 million. Now for the exit strategy. In 5 to 7 years, when we analyze deals, we always assume that the cap rate on the exit will always be higher. So if we bought a property at 5.5% cap rate, we might have to sell at 6% or 6.5% to be conservative. But here's the key. We need NOI growth to offset cap rate expansion. With 3% annual rent growth and expense management, our NOI could grow from $3.65 million to $4.2 million over 5 years. At a 6% exit cap, $4.2 million NOI divided by 0.06 equals $70 million sale price. After paying off the loan balance, approximately $40 million, we'd have $30 million in proceeds. With an 80-20 split favoring limited partners, LPs invested $17.6 million, 80% of $22 million in equity. They received $24 million at sale, 80% of $30 million proceeds. That's a $6.4 million profit over 5 years. Plus annual cash flow distributions of $936,000 annually to LPs, 80% of the $1.17 million. Total LP return, $6.4 million capital gains, plus $4.68 million in distribution over 5 years. That's an 11.8% IRR for limited partners. But what if cap rate expanded to 6.5%? Sales price dropped to $64.6 million. LP proceeds drops to $19.7 million. IRR falls to 8.2%. What if NOI drop by
2% annually, the IRR drops to 9.1. The final verdict, this deal passes on paper, but barely. An 11.8% IRR for LPs is decent, but not spectacular in today's market. The risk-adjusted return don't justify the capital deployment for our fund. Whew, so today we fell on paper. Let me tell you, it felt bad, really bad. But here's the truth. I'd rather fail on paper so I can profit in real life, because failing on paper are lessons and real life failure are consequences. I hope you catch this. Fail early, fail often, but fail in rehearsal so you can prosper in real life.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.